While some countries fret over banks that are too big to fail, South Korea is grappling with the concept of systemically important business executives. This week, a prominent tycoon who had embezzled more than $40 million from companies under his authority was released from prison after the president said pardoning him would help the economy. Choi Tae-won, leader of the country's third biggest family-controlled conglomerate, had been serving a four-year prison term. I'm Fiona Simon of the Financial Times, and on the line with me is Simon Mundy, our correspondent in Seoul. Simon, tell us something about Mr. Choi. Why did the president consider him so important to the economy of South Korea?
This is the same logic that we've seen invoked time and again, both by presidents pardoning top businessmen convicted of fraud, as well as by judges who have opted for suspended sentences instead of custodial ones to keep these people out of prison. The logic is that the chaebol groups, that's the name used in South Korea for these big conglomerates, that their way of operating is very heavily reliant on having a member of the founding family at the top of the structure to steer the overall strategy of the companies within it. SK Group is the third biggest business group in Korea. It's one of the leading global producers of various products, including memory chips and refined petroleum. So it accounts for quite a good chunk of the South Korean economy.
He's a serial offender, I believe.
Yes, that's right. He was convicted about 20 years ago or more in the US for a financial offense. In 2003 in South Korea, he was convicted of a much more serious accounting fraud. And then most recently in 2013, he was given this four-year jail sentence for stealing from companies under his authority. People sympathetic with Mr. Choi will defend him by saying, look, it's not that he's just greedy, it's that he didn't feel that he had enough assets to secure control over the group. And this goes to a matter that's quite central to the problems and controversies, I think, with the chaebol model in South Korea. Whereas in many other leading family-controlled companies around the world, the families do actually have big controlling stakes or even majority stakes. In South Korea, the direct holdings in the companies are very, very small, typically 2% or less in the overall structure of the groups. And often dozens of companies, and they're held together by cross-shareholdings between them, which combined with strategically placed direct family holdings means that the families can get the shareholder support they need because the managers of the group companies tend to be very loyal to them. So the argument is that Mr. Choi didn't have enough of his own personal assets to secure his control. So he wanted to borrow this money, invest it, and use it to shore up his support and then perhaps give it back. But clearly, borrowing money without permission from a company under your control is, in the eyes of the law, embezzlement.
I understand, too, that he's not the only such offender in South Korea.
That's right. Unfortunately, the heads of several of the very biggest chaebol groups in the country have been convicted of serious fraud offences, and in most cases they have been subsequently pardoned by the president. So that applies to the head of the Samsung group, the head of the Hyundai Motor group, the head of the Hanwha group, which is another of the biggest conglomerates here. On one occasion for Samsung, the logic was primarily that he should help Korea get the Winter Olympics because he had been a member of the IOC. But in most cases it's simply these people are important to the economy and they have to be released. And I think it's worth noting that in both the Samsung and Hyundai cases, these gentlemen were convicted of fraud that was very much related to helping to enrich their sons. Again, it comes down to how do we preserve family control over this very complicated and convoluted shareholding structure where we only have a small amount of the equity as it is. And South Korea has the second highest inheritance tax rate in the world, 50%, that's second only to Japan. So these families are left facing big questions over how do we manage to retain our control over this group for another generation. And unfortunately, in the case of both Samsung and Hyundai, that involved criminal behavior.
Isn't there any sort of public outcry from those people who favor transparency and honest business practices? Or is there tacit public support for these people?
It's complicated. There is certainly criticism. There's a lot of skepticism towards the treble, and there is this sense that there is a double legal standard that these people are allowed to get around the law. But among politicians, I think it's fair to say there is no serious consideration of anything that would end family control over the treble. So we could see earlier this year there was a big controversy when there was a merger between two Samsung companies that, in the eyes of pretty much everybody in the South Korean business community, was simply intended to shore up family control over the group. This was attacked by the American hedge fund Elliott, and the response from lawmakers on both sides of the political divide was pretty supportive to Samsung.
Could you tell us a little bit more about the treble system?
One very important thing to understand about the treble groups is that they don't actually exist as legal entities. The various Samsung companies do very much follow the authority of the chairman of the group, but the chairman of the group, in the case of Samsung and in the case of SK, doesn't actually have any legal relationship with any of the listed companies. So the authority is really exercised in a very informal way. Although it may have some positive elements, I think a lot of the investors I speak to see some benefits here. They see long-term strategy coming from the family control. They think it avoids the kind of very short-term decision-making that you can see at some Western companies. On the other hand, there are some times when these chairmen can, in the eyes of investors, make decisions that are imprudent. A good example of that came last year when Hyundai Motor, along with its affiliates Hyundai Mobis and Kia Motors, decided to spend about $10 billion on land for a new headquarters. And this prompted their combined market cap to fall by about $8.5 billion because investors thought this was a very unwise investment at a time when competitors were investing heavily in R&D.
Is there an alternative? Are there companies that are run along more conventional lines?
I think, to be honest, successive governments have shown that they are willing to do what it takes to stop that from happening. Although, yes, there are other companies coming up in South Korea that have a different model, I don't think it will happen for a long time that the treble change to a new way of structuring themselves.
And investors are not unduly concerned?
I think investors simply accept that this is the way things are done in Korea. But I think it's fair to say that concerns about corporate governance are one factor that pulls down the valuations of South Korean companies. And of course, what that means is that the cost of capital increases for the companies in question, and that serves as a kind of drag on the economy as a whole.
Thank you very much, Simon.
If you enjoyed this podcast, you might like our new show, FT Investigations, Exposés and In-Depth Analysis by our worldwide network of reporters. You can download it at ft.com/podcasts.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.